Hello and welcome everyone. I am Arthur Noble from Knight Capital and the co-author of the book Leaders of Growth. Today you are listening to the Leaders of Growth podcast. This is the first and only podcast dedicated to scaling a company across Series A to Z. We discuss with founders, operators and experts on how to manage this stage of growth successfully. In today's episode, we explore the finance and strategy topic with our guest, Herbert Zablatny, the Chief Financial Officer of Beekeeper.
Really appreciate it that you want to contribute today, that I'm also super excited. As I said, I envy you that you have already done so many great things before, and definitely think the audience as well is really keen on learning about your experience with scaling a company. And maybe we can start with that you can shortly share something about your background, tell something about the company and how you relate to the topic, basically.
Sure, glad you, and thanks for having me. Excited to be here. My name is Herbert Zablatny. I'm CFO at Beekeeper, a Swiss and US-based company. And Beekeeper aspires to be the frontline company. What does that mean and why is that? We noticed a few years ago that there's a lot of tools and technology solutions for desk workers, for like you and me. Yeah, there's Slack, there's Microsoft Office, now there's Google Sheets that make us more productive, but there's very little investment in technology solutions for essential or frontline or blue collar workers. And Beekeeper is going in that direction. And we provide the tooling to make 1.8 billion frontline workers more productive, more agile, and more effective and safer at the end of the day. I'm currently CFO, so I look after all the staff functions here. And before Beekeeper, I used to be CFO and managing director at Spark Networks. Spark Networks is a Berlin-based online dating platform. And there, my colleagues and me, we did a series of M&A acquisitions through which we grew the company from 60 million in revenue to 250 and listed the company on the New York Stock Exchange. So I've now had two operational roles where the topic of scaling and bringing companies from maybe not zero to one, but from 10 to 100 is close to my heart.
So yeah, really exciting to hear about that you're very passionate about bringing it from, let's say, 10 to 100 million. Yeah, maybe we can start with it that you said you're a CFO and that you're managing all the staff functions at the moment. Based from your experience in your two operator roles, what's basically your view on what a CFO or basically finance team, what role should they play in a startup, and also going from let's say 10 to this 100 million or maybe even further? How do you see this role of the finance team or the CFO particularly evolve over time?
Yeah, that's a good question. The way I think about the finance function is in a way like a maturity pyramid, and you need to get the base right before you can move up one level, like in a video game. So the first level is the transactional stuff, which is just processing payments, paying invoices, collecting funds, invoices, expenses. The next level two, once you manage to achieve that, is record keeping. Yeah, so there is some sort of accounting going on and I can pull a P&L and it might be in Excel and later in an ERP, but that's the second level that gives then information to investors and banks around how the company is doing and management. The third level is procurement, compliance, doing that in some sort of gap, so it's risk gap or whatever, speaking to auditors, get it in a more professional state. Fourth level is financial planning. So we support the company in doing a budget. So there's some sort of budget and we do some sort of comparison versus actuals, maybe cash flow planning. And the last level is what you might call strategic finance. That is more around setting KPIs for the entire business, possibly supporting with M&A. And what I've seen is that typically you can only progress to the next level once you have your bases covered and you have a reasonable degree on the lower levels.
And would you say on these six levels that you defined, do you see that one person can do all six, or do you see that usually once a company matures, except for rare cases, that usually also you have different people for different sort of stages?
There's probably two answers to that. So for when you're small, I think there's a long way you can go with no or one finance person as a startup and just with external support. Yeah, like an external bookkeeping or a local accountant. And it also doesn't have to be one of the big fours. Yeah, there's excellent small companies wherever you are that that can do that. And that brings you a very long way before you have to have more than one person or do that in-house. Yeah. Then where you might have to split roles is between this operational and strategic part, because it's hard to find people that can do both. Yeah. And so this is something where I think you can have someone for the first four or five levels of that pyramid that is excellent at doing that. And if that person can also do the strategic KPA part, it's a unicorn and you should never let that person go. Yeah? But I think as you grow and when you have that need, then go for it. Yeah? And in my past, I've seen that both of my companies introduced a CFO as a profile very late in the maturity curve. In the first case, the company I joined, the company was cash flow break even, 60 million revenue, 200 people. And only then they added a CFO for the strategic part and for the next phase of the company. In my current company, that happened after Series B. Yeah, so 150 people, Series B. And so I think we can go a long way without that.
Yeah, and that's really the strategic part, I think, yeah, where you add a lot of value. Yeah. Interesting. You already talked about these different layers, and which basically brings me to my next question. We're talking in the context of basically growth pains, challenges that you see in a fast-growing company, and then especially from your CFO perspective, what do you see basically they are?
Yeah, if I can answer them also from a management and leadership perspective and move beyond finance, yeah, then I would maybe
definitely
pick two. Yeah, I think one is around culture, because what is that? As a company grows from 1 to 10 to 100 to 200 employees, culture changes along the way. And at the very beginning, what you typically see is A, it's absolutely driven by founders. That continues to be true also later. Yeah. And it's not what you put on the wall, and it's not the values you define in a team exercise. It's what you live every day. Yeah. And what you do. Yeah. What that defines you. But what typically happens along that journey is a transition that needs to happen, what you might call from family to team. Because what you see initially is that everyone has fun together, everyone is young, and then at some point, one of two things happen. Either there is a bump in the road and the company needs to part ways with some people, which is very tough if you're family, yeah, and it's very tough to explain and to manage in a good way. The second thing is, at some point, you need to hire people who've done it before. And the people who brought you from 0 to 1 or from 10 to 100 people are not necessarily the people that will bring you for the next phase. And that's also tough to explain and tough to manage. And that's a journey that every company goes through. And by the way, might also affect founders, where at some point the founding team might not be complete anymore. And that I compare to becoming a team. You still each other, you still have fun together. But at the end of the day, it's very much driven by performance. And if you want to go to the Olympics, you can be cut from their team if you're not the best person for that rowing boat for the next phase. And that's an interesting and tough journey to do and to manage also for founder or executive yourself. So what you need to keep in mind is that things change very fast, and every role probably has a life cycle of 2 to 3, maybe 4 years. And then you either are ready for your next mission within that company, or your next mission might be outside of the company. The second challenge you usually have is around strategy and goal setting, because things are so dynamic and changing that you need to adjust on a constant basis. And if you think about a plane that's leaving from Zurich, yeah, to the US, and you change degrees a little bit, you end up in a very different place. So that strategy part of A, giving the necessary clarity to everyone to know what they're doing, and at the same time, not changing everything the whole time. That's a delicate trade-off that you need to think about. And one way of approaching that is you can think about the idea of a North Star metric, where you say that's the one KPI that should help you to make decisions and the one thing that should guide you on your way. And or you can think about the idea of annual themes. And you say that year, it's all about X. Yeah, and that over time might, for example, be this year, it's all about growth. Next year, it's all about internationalization. Let's open a new office and enter a new market. The next year might be all about efficiency. Let's work on cash burn and make us more efficient. And so that is might be one good tool to give that balance between having the full focus of the organization and giving you some flexibility so you can adjust.
Hey, and diving a bit deeper on the ladder, what I often see, and that's I think also where the trade-off comes in, is that, so just to give a practical example, like with us as a VC, like our goal maybe for the year is like doing a few excellent deals and define, let's say, the number. Then for marketing, I definitely have to make sure that the number, that the goal is basically tied up to doing the deals, maybe generating leads or sourcing deals or whatever. But there are also quite some goals which in itself are important for the marketing department, which do not really tie up to this overall goal. And there you get the conflict of doing that. And I think then for every functional department, especially in a large organization, you get it. How do you make sure to keep like alignment between the overall goals and the department goals, which sometimes deviate?
That's very good. But at the end of the day, it's management's job to ensure there is no goal conflict. If that happens, you did something wrong. You can't, like, sometimes you need to resolve it, but it's, I see it as a core job of leadership and management to ensure that these things fit together. Yeah. And I have two or three thoughts. Let's see if I remember. Yeah? So the first one is you need to be clear about your vision, like where want you be in the long term. And one tool of doing that is a one-page strategic plan where you put everything that the company is about on one page. In our case, we do have our values. We do have our vision. We have who our customer is, who our core markets are, core customer segments, North Star metric priorities for the year. It fits all on one page and it's not font size 7. And it's something you actually, I have glasses, but you can read that. Yeah. And it's something we reiterate in every global team meeting. We pull that slide up and it's something that we start with, that strategy sessions start with. And that's something we start with. Secondly, we have an annual planning process for the whole company. Here, I think an interesting question you need to ask yourself is, which department leads your company? In my past company, online dating was a marketing-driven company. We start there, we set goals for marketing, everything else follows. I think my current company, if you ask engineers, they might say it's product-led. If you ask sales, it's sales-led. I think it's a little bit more sales-led. So the first targets we set is sales, and then you can actually inform with them, okay, marketing, what's the pipeline we need? You can speak to hire and you run through every team. In the end, you run through the people and talent team and you can induce how many people do I need to hire and what team. And actually, you can have that as a systematic process and ensure everyone is aligned. Yeah. And then and the same thing during the year, you can, I think we're fairly okay at that because we were founded by Swiss engineers. This is as organized as it gets. So there is company priorities. We use OKRs. There is quarterly priorities and there's team OKRs. You can think about it as a card house. If you add up everything, it actually ties up and people are aligned. It's very transparent. And if we all achieve our individual goals, we also achieve the company goal. It requires a bit of planning and exercise, but practice, but I've seen work there quite well.
Perfect. Yeah, really exciting to that you lay out this whole structure. Something you mentioned before, which I found interesting, is that you mentioned the word trade-off. And basically, I was quite curious to see how you look towards the trade-off of efficiency versus growth. How do you look at that? Yes. And maybe does the size or maybe the stage of a company have an influence as a mitigating variable?
That's a very good question. I start with the second part. So size absolutely matters for that. And I would say initially, it's all about growth. Initially, you want to show there is a market for you. You want to show product market fit. You want to show potential. You want to go after that market. And initially, you don't have to do things that scale all the time and you shouldn't be too concerned about efficiency. As you approach Series B, investors will ask suddenly about other KPIs besides growth. Yeah, and maybe you can also speak to that from an investor perspective afterwards, how you think about that and if you agree or not. Because at some point, you want to show that you do have a business model and that you don't need only cash to fuel that growth, but there is some inherent momentum and there is a path to being a viable business that you can stand on your own feet. And I think at the latest at Series C, you need to show a path towards, at least I can see in the horizon, I'm cash flow break even, and this is the plan. You can still choose to deviate from that, but you need to be able to have the option of being on that path. So for us being somewhere between Series B and C at the moment, we think a lot about that trade-off because if we hit the gas harder and we want to grow faster, there might be a bit
bit more or a bit less efficiency. And we try to do both. The way I think about it, we try to fly a plane at high speed while fixing the motor. Yeah. So to we get more fuel out of the tank, and then both is important, and we need to improve both at the same time. And I would be curious to hear a bit about the investor perspective.
Yeah, definitely. I think once you get to Series B and C, where you are today, I think an LTV CAC ratio is used. I think is most used to assess like can this company become profitable on a unit basis. And I think in a Series A and sometimes Series B, investors can be a bit more forgiving and look to the potential. But once you get from Series B to C, I'd say it has to crystallize more. And also if you, for instance, look for upsells and you expand your product so that you can increase the customer lifetime value, I think those things become more important, as well as in the Series B and C, especially if you serve an enterprise segment. Mm-hmm. I suggest that you get a better view on where churn is, the actual churn is. And from there, also your calculations become much, much stronger. And you have an amount of data so that you can segment your data a bit more to see if it's really the case. That would be my quick answer. But I'm also curious how you look as an operator to it.
Segmentation is a good one. Yeah, segmentation is a very good one. Yes. Yeah. So I think initially you start with average, and that's okay. But I think the key thing is really segmentation, to double click on that and then think about what are really the markets I want to play. And one way of approaching that is possibly like a Rubik's Cube, like that thing where you have two or three different dimensions and axes. One is probably the geographies you play in. The second one is, if you think about marketing, what are the channels or go-to-market strategies that I want to address those geographies? And the third dimension might be the customer segment, where you say, I have maybe more the SMB versus enterprise versus large enterprise. And within that Rubik's Cube, if you have a lot of these small cubes, right? If you think about the three dimensions, not all are the same. Yeah, they're very different. And you, your efficiency and growth potential are very different. And you should be very selective in saying which ones to choose and where you want to go after and which you don't go after. And those probably also change over time.
Yeah, very interesting. On that model, what you just mentioned, we should have another conversation, since I developed a bit of an Ansoff 2.0 model on that. And I'm definitely curious to hear your perspective.
I drew a lot of these Rubik's Cubes in past my companies. I thought a fair bit about that. Very happy to
Definitely. It's something which maybe also to go a bit deeper in, especially if you grow the company and you've of course seen like different stages, is can you maybe define which are some strategic challenges and strategic considerations companies like have to make? And maybe also a bit from founders or operators who are a bit earlier, who think, okay, I've go to market fit and then I'm scaling. It's also a bit of a perspective, hey, if you're one or a few, two steps further, this is something you have to think about.
I think a big one is focus. And one way of thinking about that could be that initially you should hustle for every deal. Like in the very beginning, yes, you should do whatever it takes to win that customer, and even if it doesn't scale. And yes, we do that extra mile, and you should hustle for every deal. And as you grow, I think you need to be more selective around which Rubik's Cube to pick and which to say no to. And a big part of strategy is not only saying what you will do, it's equally important to be clear about what you will not do and then sticking to that. Because if tomorrow that deal comes around the corner that is not in your target geography and it's not your target customer, and you just have to build these two, three things in product for that one customer, be thoughtful and consistent about whether you want to do that or not. Yeah. So I think over time you need to learn to say no, because initially you need to say yes, and then that will make you successful. And over time you have to unlearn, and at some point you have to be clear about what are the things we do versus what we don't do. And that's a very big one, I think. And that's something where leadership and management is required to be very crystal clear on the rules of the game. And why they maybe also changed versus yesterday. Because over time, it's a bit like peanut butter, that if you have a marketing budget, you can either spread it thin over a lot of geos, a lot of customer segment, a lot of buyer personas, and a lot of marketing channels, or you can say, okay, I understood now. I understand that that market, that customer segment, that buyer persona, and that marketing or demand gen channel are the ones that work. Let's go all in. And it takes a bit of balls. It's the difference between playing to win or playing not to lose. But you should focus, because I think that's required to get to the next level.
Something which very much interests me based when you say that is that you have, of course, these autonomous teams who can a bit decide for themselves, determine the roadmap, etc., compared to the focus that you say, and I definitely buy into this focus. How do you, from maybe an organization design or processes or whatever, how do you make sure that you can keep this focus and that autonomy basically is only used for good?
Yeah, so I think it's taking the organization and the team on that discovery journey of defining what's the playing field we want to play in. Yeah, and then saying and explaining and with data and showing this is the playing field for those reasons. And this is where we want to play. And that's still humongous. We don't need all the other stuff. If we pick these out of these 100 Rubik's Cube, if we pick those 10, we have enough to do for the next 5 years anyway. Yeah, let's focus there. And so if you define the rules of the game, if you say these are the things, then and you take the organization on it and you get buy-in, yeah, then that's a very good first step. Yeah. Secondly, I think a culture of disagreeing and committing is healthy. Yeah. And I think we can all discuss and we can all say, I have a different opinion and we should do that. But once we decide it, I think we go that way. Yeah. And I think we should stick to that. And thirdly, you can also put checks and balances in place. Yeah. So if you want to get really extreme, we don't do that, but you could sales incentivization. I will not pay commission on that deal that doesn't fit that support. We will not have marketing support for that thing. Yeah. Translation, legal, no, we don't have that. Yeah. So I think you can put institutionalized support or lack of support in place to also support the direction where you once mentioned out.
Yeah, I think that is all valid points, because I think focus is really one of the main things that if you get to a point to if you're going to be great, good or really great. Thanks for that. Just something to progress. Is there anything that you like to share that I did not ask for?
No, I'm excited about the book. I hope to learn a few things because this is all. Yeah, as you learn every day. Yeah, and hopefully you get a little bit better over time or when you do it the second time. But these growth environments are super, super interesting and a great place to be. Yeah, and it's a team sport. Yeah, and if maybe around the book, one day you could establish a community of where people can exchange knowledge. That would be awesome. Yeah, because many of the challenges we face are not ones that are individual to the company, but that come time and again, and where VCs can be very helpful as sparring partners, but also other operators are extremely valuable. Yeah, and if people have questions out there and want to reach out, happy to be of help.
Yeah, great. Because that brings me to my last and final question. Like, do you have some content recommendations? Mm-hmm. How can people find you online? And is there anyone that you recommend me to talk to in the context of the book?
Yeah, LinkedIn is good. Otherwise, I'm not on TikTok. Yeah? So I think that's probably the best way. In terms of books, two I find important and relevant for scale-ups is one about hiring. It's called Who, the A Method for Hiring. I can also send you the link and maybe you can put that there. It's hands down the best book on hiring I've read. And it's a process in there for hiring that we follow at McLaren in my last company. Yeah. And I think that's one of the key responsibilities of a leader and founder. Second one, a book I found useful is called Scale Up. Again, I can send you a link. There's a couple of worthwhile tools in there, like that one-page strategic plan I shared with you. And I mentioned both highly recommended.
Perfect. Yeah, let's to wrap up. Something I can say is that I'm very excited about the call. I learned a lot. Huh? We talked about the trade-offs, the focus, but also how you laid out how a company develops over time, as well as this whole framework for goal setting. I think it will be very valuable for the community. Thanks a lot that you wanted to dedicate your time and share that with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Yeah, and I'm equally excited about the stuff I'm going to get out of the book. Yeah? And many thanks for putting this together.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that.
Thank you for listening. If you want to get access to the podcast transcripts or the Leaders of Growth book, go to leadersofgrowth.co. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. I'm looking forward to seeing you next time.